Mm-hmm. You heard it on The Swing Era, forgotten latecomers to The Swing Era, Johnny Bothwell and his band. Last up, George Handy's composition and arrangement of The Trouble With Me Is You, recorded May 1945. The alto, of course, was Johnny, and the tenor, Frank Sokolow. And before that, nice Bothwell alto on I Cover the Waterfront, from June 1945. Again, arranged by George Handy. And kicking off the second half from May 1945, a George Williams composition and arrangement of John's Other Wife, with John's alto and Tommy Allison's trumpet. Forgotten latecomers to The Swing Era. It on the Swing Era, Unknown Latecomers to the Swing Era, the November 1949 West Coast Orchestra of Tom Talbert, with Talbert's arrangement of I Cover the Waterfront, nicely done with John Anderson's trumpet, Art Pepper's alto, and what sounds like two tenors soloing, John Barbera and Steve White. In between, another Tom Talbert arrangement from August 1949 with some Claude Williamson piano, Pepper's alto, and Wes Hensel's trumpet on Over the Rainbow. At the top, from earlier in November 1946, Talbert's composition and arrangement of Flight of the Voutbug, featuring some nice Dodo Mamarosa piano and Lucky Thompson tenor. Another unknown and forgotten latecomer to the swing era.
Enchanted by a Lorelei, so long for a star all at once from the long and lonely night time. And despite time, here you are. I'd cry out of this world if you said we were through. So let me fly out of this world and spend the next eternity or two with you.
On the last set of the swing era, just up the forgotten George Paxton Orchestra with Paxton's arrangement of the swing perennial Blue Lou, recorded October 1944. The tenor was Boomy Richmond and the trumpet Roger Ellick. And in the middle, Alan Dale sang Out of This World. And starting the last set, a tune titled Solid Mahogany, from the same October 1944 session, with Jack Purcell's guitar and Ellick's trumpet. And that's it, forgotten and unknown latecomers to the swing era. Well, that's it. Time to put the recordings back in the vault. Till next time, and we'll have more. This is your host, Bud Pearson, hoping you enjoyed Swing Era Latecomers. Join us here again, and we'll take another ride when we'll present more artists as they created the styles and the sounds of the swing era. We'll see you then, and remember, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
CEA Atherton Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again, to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thanks, Dave, and welcome to this edition of Yesteryear. On today's program, it's the new adventures of Detective Nero Wolfe, starring Mr. Sidney Greenstreet. We'll get to that in a moment, but first, you ain't heard nothing yet. So you've heard the music of Al Jolson. We feature today a broadcast of Al Jolson on the Kraft Music Hall. Now, Al's first documented live appearance before a radio microphone was in April of 1925, when he was a part of a midnight broadcast from the stage of the Hippodrome Theater in New York, a tribute to General John Pershing. By November of 1932, Al was the star of his own series, Presenting Al Jolson. Jolson appeared more or less quite regularly from 1932 all the way through October of 1947, when he began his last series of appearances on the Kraft Music Hall. This series ended in May of 1949. Today's program features a broadcast from 1947, with announcer Ken Carpenter, Oscar Levant accompanying him at the piano, and acting as a comedy foil, along with Lou Brings' orchestra and chorus. From 1947, it's the Al Jolson Show. You ain't heard nothing yet. On this edition of Yesteryear.
Major Bose, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton, Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again, to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
This is Ken Carpenter welcoming you to the Music Hall, starring Al Jolson with Oscar Levant and Lou Brings' orchestra and Al's guests.
So keep on looking for a blooper and listening for its song. Whenever April a shower comes along.
Here in Palm Springs, we sit in the sunshine, next to the swimming pool with a tall, cool drink in our hand. If we want ice cubes, we don't have to call anybody. We just reach over and chip them out of the swimming pool. But here's a song about a place where instead of smudging oranges, they smudge pineapples. Down Hawaii away, where a chance to stray, on an evening I heard a hula maiden say, yaka-hula-hiki-doo-la, yaka-hula-hiki-doo. Down Hawaii away, by the moonlit bay, when I lingered a while, she stole my heart away. Yaka-hula-hiki-doo-la, yaka-hula-hiki-doo. Oh, I don't care if you love the ladies far and near, you'll forget about them all if you could hear. Yaka-hula-hiki-doo-la, yaka-hula-hiki-doo. I'm coming back to you, my hula-loo. Beside the sea at Waikiki, you'll play for me, and once again you'll sway my heart away. We go yaka-hula, hiki-doo-la too. I'm coming back to you, my hula lives beside the sea at Waikiki. You're gonna play for me, and once again you'll sway my heart away with your yaka-hula, hiki-doo-la too.
There's no question about it. Palm Springs agrees with you. You're full of energy and you look healthy and happy.
Yes, Ken, I love Palm Springs. It's the greatest place in the world. Top everything. It's the only place where you can get a suntan and a frostbite at the same time.
Al, I want to give you something.
Well, that's nice of you, Oscar. What is it?
A bill for my expenses.
Fine thing. Okay, let me see the list. Oscar, wait a minute. What's this item? Dinner at the Saddle and Sirloin Restaurant, $100. How can a sirloin cost $100?
I didn't have sirloin. I had saddle.
Wait a minute. What's this next item? Back bedroom at the Villa Hamukta, $160. I think I'll go down the highway and open up a poorhouse. I'll catch all the people coming back from Palm Springs.
Incidentally, Al, there's another item there on my expense account.
Yeah?
$20 for dates.
$20 for dates? Oscar, look, I don't intend to give you money to take out girls.
You don't understand. These are the kind of dates that hang from trees.
Oscar, I don't care how athletic your girlfriends are. I don't intend to pay for them.
Al, are you going to pay my expenses or not?
Of course. I promise to pay. Gee, I wonder if another network would be interested in a rummage sale featuring Oscar Levin. Oscar, wait a minute. I didn't announce your number yet. What are you playing for?
I'm not playing. I'm knocking the sand out of the piano.
Sand?
Well, if I don't, the Shevchenko Realty Company will subdivide it and build a hotel.
Not a bad idea, Oscar. You could call it the Casa Steinway. Listen, what are you going to play today?
What am I going to play?
Yeah.
Something inexpensive. Fire Dance by Defaya.
Fire Dance.
Thank you. have something here I want to call your attention.
What is it, Ken?
Well, it's my expense account.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you're paying for this trip.
Yeah, I'm paying for it. Okay, let me see it.
There it is.
Saddle and Sirloin Restaurant, $50.
Right.
That's funny, Ken. Levant spent $100 at Saddle and Sirloin. You only spent $50. How come?
I eat side saddle.
Doesn't anybody in this show eat hamburger?
Yeah, me. Here's my bill. Hamburger, $100.
Now, look here, Lou Bring. How can hamburger cost $100?
Because I like steak. That's what they charge to put the little pieces back together.
Lou, hey, Bring, give your bill to the fellow who takes care of my money. His name is Epi. That's him standing over there with his hands tied behind his back. Now, if the orchestra will trust me, I promise to pay him immediately after this song. I want a girl just like the girl that married dear old dad. He was a pearl and the only girl that daddy ever had. Good old fashioned girl with a heart so true, one who loved nobody else but you. I want a girl just like the girl that married dear old,
that married dear old dad.
Al, can't we talk over this expense business?
Look, Oscar, I don't want to argue about paying, but honestly, I just can't afford it. You see, I have lots of other expenses.
Well, why don't you get mad at the government and cut the Marshall Plan off without a cent?
Oscar, look, I don't like to discuss my personal problems with you, but I can't throw my money away because over at my house, there's a little fellow who needs food to eat and clothes to wear. I don't want my little ace to stand bareheaded and ragged on the street corner selling newspapers when there's more money in magazines. I want him to have all the things that I didn't have when I was a boy. A nice home, an education. I want him to have all those, including health and happiness.
Stop, Al, stop. You don't need to pay my expenses. I couldn't take any money from you.
This speech used to work even when I didn't have a kid. Now, Oscar, you just sit over there, and I'll try to cheer you up with a song appropriately titled Don't Let It Get You Down.
Love is a lovely thing. Love is a breath of spring. Love is a magic crown. But don't let it get you down. Give it a little whirl. Show it a little care. Get it into your heart. But baby, don't let it get into your hair. Hand it a big hello. Give it a fond farewell. What if it doesn't last forever? Better a little now than never. Shout it around the town, but don't let it get you down. Love is a lovely thing. Love is a thing we sing. Love is a star we steer. But don't let it strip your gear. Love is a song by Kern. Love is a waltz by Strauss. Is there a sweeter song in heaven? Is there a doctor in the house? Love is a gypsy call. Love is the world and all. Why is it such a strange illusion? Maybe it needs a blood transfusion. Love is a wedding gown, but don't let him zip it down.
Hey, Al, I don't like to keep bothering you, but we still haven't straightened out the expense account.
Yeah, Jolson, pay my expenses, or I'll take my baton and poke holes in your next number.
Ken. Ken, Lou, look, boys, I don't want to depress you with my personal problems, but really, fellas, I just can't pay you. You see, over at my house, there's a little fella who needs food to eat and clothes to wear. I don't want little Asa to stand barefooted and ragged.
Stop, Al. Forget the money. You need it more than I do. Yes, Al, forget it. Here, take the silver dollar for your little kid.
Thank you, Lou. I need all I get. Wait a minute. This dollar has two heads.
Yes, it's my gambling dollar.
The cove isn't open. Now, Lou, dry your tears and poke your baton to the officer, because I got a song about my favorite gal. Take it, boys.
Rosie, you are my posy. You are my heart bouquet. Come out in the silvery moonlight. There's something sweet, love, I wanna say. Your honey boy, I'm waiting. Those ruby lips to grease. Don't be so aggravating, my blushing Rosie. My posy's sweet. There's a little bunch of sweetness that I long to call my bride. And believe me, I'm not happy when my baby's by my side. Her baptismal name is Rosie, but she puts the rose to shame. And most every night you'll hear me call her name. Professor, I'm gonna sing about my baby Rosie. You are my posy. You are my heart bouquet. I'm out here in the moonlight. There's something sweet, love, I'm singing about my Rosie. Your honey, your boy, I'm waiting. Those ruby, those lips to greet. Don't be so captivating, my blushing Rosie, my posy sweet.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
I guess there's nothing sadder in this whole world than a fellow carrying a torch for the gal he loves.
But sad as it is, it makes a beautiful theme for a song, and Irving Berlin thought of that, oh, a long time ago.
Say it isn't so.
Say it isn't so. Everyone is saying you don't love me, saying so. Everywhere I go, everyone I know whispers that you're growing tired of me, saying so. People say that you found somebody new, and it won't be long before you leave me, saying true.
that everything is still okay. That's all I want to know. And what they're saying, it isn't so. That everything is still okay. That's all I want to know. And what they're saying.
I've been thinking over this expense question, and I've decided you should pay.
Oscar, I'm not Al Jolson. I'm Larry Parks.
Gee, Larry, I thought you looked like Al Jolson. I'm awfully sorry.
So is Columbia Pictures. But, Oscar, what were you trying to say to me about expenses?
Well, Jolson brought us down here, and now he's beefing about the money.
Well, now, don't worry about it, Oscar. I promise you. Al will pay.
But, Larry, can you talk for Jolson?
Well, I've done it in two pictures.
You talk like him, and now you're beginning to look like him.
Yeah, you'd be surprised the number of people who mistake me for Al. You know, when we worked in the Jolson story, and we'd both black up and get down on our knees, there was only one way you could tell us apart.
How?
I was able to get up.
Well, Larry, there's another way. When someone mistakes you for Jolson, just shake your pockets. And when they hear the no jingle, they'll be convinced you're not him.
Oh, excuse me, Oscar. Here comes Al. Well, hello, Al, old boy.
Well, hello, Al, young boy.
Gee, Al, what a tan you've got. Now, stand back a minute and let me take a good look at you. Yeah, tomorrow when I shoot that scene, I better add another wrinkle.
Why wasn't I born a girl? Then I could have had Betty Grable play me.
Al, in those days, girls weren't born. They got them from ribs.
This boy is padding his part and my age. But it's good to see you, Larry, and now I've got a chance to ask you something I've always wanted to know.
Well, what is it, Al?
Well, Larry, you played me my first life story, and now you're playing me my second life story. Now, what do you think of that?
Stop already.
Ah, but listen, son, on the level, you enjoy doing the part. Tell me, what was the most difficult thing about playing me?
Getting paid.
That was Harry Cohn. I had nothing to do with it. My word of honor. Besides, Larry, I've had a very tough day. Everybody's been trying to get money away from me.
Yeah, that's the real Jolson story.
Stop already, will you?
I'm only kidding, Al. You know, I think an awful lot of you, and it's real nice to be on your program.
Thank you, Larry, and I want you to know I'm happy to have you here with me, really.
Do you really mean that?
Yes, things are a little more equal here. They can hear me sing, but they can't see you.
You know, Al, I was thinking about that. Anytime you want to take a rest, I'll be more than happy to do your singing for you.
Larry, I'll let you sing for me the day Palm Spring freezes over. What am I saying? You did last night, come to think of it.
Well, actually, Al, I couldn't sing in your place. After all, people will always say there was only one Al Jolson.
Until you... Until you came along, Larry. As a matter of fact, I think you just can't help improving yourself when you're playing Al Jolson.
You're absolutely right. I couldn't help improving Al Jolson.
Wait a minute. Don't get levantish. Listen. Everything you did in that picture, I taught you. Remember that.
That's true, Al. Don't think I'm not grateful. Of course, there were some things in the picture that if I'd been the producer, I'd have done a little differently.
Now he's playing the life of Harry Cohn. Look, what would you have done differently?
Well, I would have had you play yourself, Al, I'd have played your father.
Larry, why would you want to be my father?
Maybe you'd send a check home once in a while. You see, Al, I'd have a big scene where your father says to you, Asa, you're 12 years old now, and every minute you're in the house, you sing. You sing all morning, and you sing all afternoon. Asa, why don't you run away from home?
But, Papa, I don't want to run away from home. I want to stay here with you and make you happy.
No, Asa. Run away and make me happy.
But, Papa, if I run away, I'll get in trouble. I'll be no good. I'll even be as bad as that little boy next door, Eddie Cantor.
Eddie's a good boy. He's a good boy. He's very popular.
I know he's popular. He's got 5 girls.
All I want, Asa, is that you should go away and become famous. And if you don't become famous, I don't care. Go away anyhow.
I think I will go away, Papa. Maybe someday I'll be a famous singer.
Good, Asa, good. Maybe sometime you'll be so famous and so important they'll make a picture about your life.
Yeah.
So live well, do a lot of things, be spectacular, and that'll make it real hard for Larry Parks.
It's a good idea, Papa. Then when I'm an old man, and I can't sing anymore, I'll quit.
No. Then you'll go on the radio.
That's enough, Larry. This wouldn't have been any good. You see, you're not sweet enough to play my father. You're better playing me. And really, son, I don't want to have any unpleasantries. When I invite you down here to Palm Springs, I wanted, well, both of us to have a good time.
Well, I've had a wonderful time, Al, thanks to you. Incidentally, I have a little matter of business to take up with you.
Larry, please. No more lawsuits.
No lawsuit, Al. It's my expense account. You know, it cost me a few dollars to come down here to the Springs and,
Larry, not you too. You more than anybody should know how I stand financially. You know I'm not wealthy. You see, over at my house, there's a little boy who needs shoes and clothes and food. You see, most men retire, but I gotta keep working to take care of that little baby of mine. Larry, with all my heart and soul, I beg you. I beg you, Larry!
No wonder they hired me to act for him.
Larry, all joking aside, of all the songs you sang in the Jolson story, which one did you like best?
Well, Al, I thought I was in particularly good voice in the anniversary song.
Well, that's my choice, too. Lou, for Larry and me, and the public listening, and those in the theater here, play the anniversary song, please.
Oh, how we dance on the night we were wed. We vowed our true love, though a word wasn't said. The world was in bloom. There were stars in the skies, except for the few that were there in your eyes. Dear, as I held you close in my arms, angels were singing a hymn to your charms. Two hearts gently beating were murmuring low. My darling, I love you so. The night seemed to fade into blood.
lessening dawn, the sun shone anew, but the dance lingered on. Could we but relive that sweet moment sublime, we'd find that our love is unaltered by time.
Good night, everybody, and be sure to listen next week.
From 1947, it's been the Kraft Music Hall with Al Jolson. In a moment, you'll enjoy The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet, as Yesteryear continues.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Well, thanks, Dave, and welcome back to this edition of Yesteryear. Coming up next, it's The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe. Nero Wolfe debuted on radio in the spring of 1943 in a short-lived series starring J.B. Williams. The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe then aired from October of 1950 through 1951 on NBC, starring Sidney Greenstreet, best known for his role as the Fat Man in Dashiell Hammett's The Maltese Falcon, starring Humphrey Bogart. On this edition, a professional sneak thief persuades Wolfe to prove him innocent in the murder of a wealthy heiress. From March of 1951, it's The Case of the Disappearing Diamonds on this edition of Yesteryear.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell brings you mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking.
Willie Inch, did you say?
Just a second. Do you want to talk to a fellow named Willie Inch, which I doubt?
No.
He says he's got to see you, got to.
Who is he?
I'll ask. Mr. Wolfe doesn't recognize your name, Mr. Inch. He wants to know who you are. Just a second, I'll tell him. Mr. Inch says he's a sneak thief. He says you never heard of him, but he's heard of you. Should I tell him to get lost?
Wait a minute, Archie. Ask him what he wants.
Inch, Mr. Wolfe wants to know what you want to see him about. This is a phony murder rap.
It'd have to be, wouldn't it, Archie? Did you ever hear of a sneak thief committing murder? Yes, Archie. Tell Mr. Inch. I'll listen to his story.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that renowned genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-borne mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe. Created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
Well, Mr. Wolfe and I talk about this little difficulty. He calls it the case of Archie Goodwin and how he got hooked. However, I call it the case of the disappearing diamonds. I prefer my title. He prefers his. Anyhow, it started with an improbable character named Willie Inch.
That'll be our sneak thief, Archie. Let him in.
Okay, boss.
Okay.
Inch?
Yeah.
Come in. In there. I'll follow you. Mr. Wolfe, this is your client.
Mr. Inch?
Yeah.
Tall fellow. Must be over 6 feet six. Sit down.
Where?
Archie?
Here, Mr. Inch. This ought to be comfortable.
Where, Mr. Inch?
Look, Mr. Wolfe. They're going to claim that I killed a woman I never even touched. And I'm going to fry for something I never even done.
All right, Mr. Inch. How did you kill her?
I didn't. I never killed nobody in my life.
Mr. Inge, you say you're a thief. Can you prove it?
I got a record. Why?
I was wondering about that bulge in your pocket.
Oh, here? It's a silver cigarette lighter, ain't it? I guess it sort of dropped into my pocket as I was going by. You see the way it happened?
Never mind, Mr. Inge. Now tell me how you didn't kill the woman for whose murder you will fry.
Well, Mr. Wolf, sir, it was like this. There was a window half open, you see, and I happened to crawl inside the house. But hey now.
Well, is that?
This is just between us, ain't it?
Possibly.
How do you mean?
Explain, Archie.
Mr. Wolf said possibly.
Oh. Well, okay. So I happened to find myself in the bedroom, see? So I happened to sort of roam around, and I hear there's like a party going on. You know, people and music. So I locked the door.
So go on.
Let him tell it his own way, Archie. Well, Miss Inch?
So that's the mistake I make.
Mistake?
Maybe I leave my fingerprints on the door.
So?
So later, a dame gets herself knocked off in the same room, and they look for fingerprints, and they find mine. I'm it. That's all. I got a record. So the chair.
I see. Pitiful case, isn't it, Archie?
Very, very mournful.
Inch.
Yes, sir?
I presume you came away with some souvenirs?
Oh, nothing. It wasn't worth the trouble. You know, just odds and ends, junk.
Have you got the junk with you?
Yeah.
Let me see.
Here.
Cigarette case, platinum. Lighter, gold. Vanity case, gold. That's all?
Positively.
Junk, the man says.
I promise nothing, Mr. Inge, but it might be better if you told the truth.
Me?
You.
Oh, well.
One square cut emerald ring.
I just happened to find it. There's something more.
A pewter ashtray.
Look, the room is dark. I can't see. Piles of coats on the beds and hats and handbags. I take what I find.
Why didn't you turn on the lights?
One of these big standing lamps. You know what I mean.
Go on.
I bump into it, and it scares the living... I mean, it scares me.
So?
I turn the switch. It don't work.
Archie.
That sounds like the law, boss.
The law?
Stay right where you are, Willie. May I suggest there is a way to find out, Archie?
Okay. We don't want any.
Good morning, Goodwin. You remember me, your old friend, Inspector Kramer? Two gentlemen with me are also with the department, Perley and Ostrakovich. May we come in?
What do you want?
We want a murderer, and we want some rocks worth 250 grand. Does that answer your question?
What makes you think you'll find all those goodies here?
Come in, men. We know Willie Inch is here. Where is he?
Now, just a second.
We're coming with you, Goodwin.
Okay, Inspector, come along.
Well, Archie?
The law.
That's Willie Inch. Frisk him. No weapons? Okay, just put the cuffs on him.
Inspector Kramer.
Oh, yes. Hello, Wolf.
I want to tell you something about this man whom you and your men have so bravely captured in my office.
You don't need to tell me about him, Wolf. We know about him.
Do you indeed?
Yes. We know he killed Mrs. Florence Avery March and stripped $250,000 worth of diamonds off her. That's all we need to know.
I didn't do no such a thing.
Where's the ice, Willie?
I never even seen none, honest.
Take him away, boys. I'll make the charge when I get back to my office.
Wait. Now, Mr. Wolf, sir.
Take him.
Look, I ain't done nothing, I tell you.
Inspector Kramer.
Yeah. We're going to have a little talk now, aren't we?
If necessary.
How do you mean?
Explain, Archie.
Mr. Wolf means you're going to have a little talk, if necessary.
Very funny. I will now draw up a chair and show you why it's necessary. In the first place, $250,000 worth of diamonds makes it necessary.
Archie, if you please, about the beer.
Okay. Will the inspector name his poison?
You know I never drink on duty.
Then just for me, Archie, please.
On my way. While I opened a bottle of imported beer, it occurred to me that I had something to be grateful for. At least I wasn't in Willie Inch's enormous shoes. And as I went back to the office, I had time to wonder why Mr. Wolf would stick his fat neck out for a no-good like Willie.
Thank you, Archie, and sit down, Archie. Inspector Kramer has a theory that may amuse you.
Nero Wolf's office. It's for you, Inspector.
Hello, Kramer. Yeah? A gold cigarette holder? That's all? Okay.
Inspector, do you realize that you have already taken a great deal of my time?
Archie.
Yes, Inspector?
The great Mr. Wolf just said I had a theory that might amuse you. Would you care to hear it?
I can hardly wait.
Okay. My theory is that both Wolf and you are receivers of stolen property and possibly guilty of murder conspiracy.
So far, you got me in stitches.
Willie Inch, with a record as long as your arm, robs the home of Mrs. Florence Avery Marsh. He strangles her with a silk scarf, takes the diamond she's wearing, grabs everything else that's lying around, and then what?
Is it a question?
I'll tell you what.
He will, too. Archie, listen.
Then Inch brings the stuff here, the stuff that's piled on Wolf's desk and the diamonds. You want me to tell you where the diamonds are? They're in that safe right there.
Inspector Kramer, I know nothing about the diamonds. They are not in the safe, and they are not in the house. Now, you can take my word for it, or you can get a search warrant and make a fool of yourself. I'm going to have lunch.
By 2 o'clock, the newspapers were full of the murder of Mrs. Florence Avery March. The suspect was already in custody, caught at the home of Nero Wolf, well-known private investigator. Some of the stolen jewelry had been recovered, but not the diamonds. Then we had a visit from Mr. Anson Stark, who had opened Mrs. March's door and found her dead. Stark was a big athletic guy of about 30 or so, with the large, capable hands of a surgeon or a laboratory worker. He seemed annoyed at the inconvenience we caused him, but that was only natural.
That's the story, Mr. Wolf. I don't see how I can add anything more to it.
You had known Mrs. March for several years, huh?
Casually.
When you broke the door open, was it difficult?
Not very.
You were the first into the room?
There were three or four of us. We pushed in together.
You saw the body of Mrs. March immediately?
She was lying across the bed that was heaped with coats and hats and handbags.
You knew she was dead?
Of course not. In fact, somebody else discovered that she had been choked to death.
And who discovered that the diamonds were gone?
I don't know. I didn't.
Were there many diamonds, Mr. Stark?
No, just a few, but big ones. She wore them on a pendant around her neck.
Mr. Stark, I want to thank you again for having been so patient.
I have been patient, Mr. Wolf. I have my own business to attend to.
Which is?
Oh, I have a small but hopeful enterprise. Electronics, tubes for radio and television. Mostly experimental.
Well, that reminds me, Mr. Stark. When you entered the bedroom, was the light on or off?
Let me see. Of course, it was on. It must have been on. Why?
Just curiosity, Mr. Stark.
Oh? Anything more?
That's all, except thank you for coming here. Archie, will you take Mr. Stark to the door?
Mr. Stark departed like a man who'd been delayed by a petty annoyance. A few minutes later, the door buzzed, and I went, expecting anything. Anything but what was standing on the threshold when I opened up. A honey blonde. Or, to put it another way, a blonde honey. I said hello. No, more like hello.
Are you Mr. Wolf?
I'm his assistant, Archie Goodwin, and what can we do for you?
Well, I'm Valerie Ladd.
And I'm Archie Goodwin. Or did I tell you that?
Well, that's exactly where I came in. Well, I mean, where I thought you were going to ask me to come in.
Oh, come in. I'm sorry.
Well, is he? Is he here?
Wolf?
Mm-hmm.
Does he know you?
No.
Is he expecting you?
No.
I see.
Of course you don't see, do you? Well, this is it, Mr. Goodwin. I'm a writer. Well, I may not look like it, but that's what I am. And I want to do a profile, a character study of Mr. Wolf for a magazine.
Oh.
Well, what's wrong?
Well, you see, there's a writer named Rex Stout.
Oh, I know. He's written a lot about Nero Wolf, but... Well, can't I write about him, too?
I don't know if he's going to like it, but you can't be shot for trying. Come on. Mr. Wolf, this is Valerie Ladd.
Pardon me for not rising, Miss Ladd. It is not impolite. It is merely impracticable.
Miss Ladd wants to write about you for a magazine.
Please, Mr. Wolf.
Nonsense.
Mr. Wolf, if I could just spend a few hours with you, that would be enough.
Would it indeed?
Oh, yes.
Have you written much, Miss Ladd?
Oh, reams.
You know, the habits of writers interest me.
The habits?
Yeah, the writing habits. For instance, do you use a pen or a pencil? Do you dictate, or like most writers, do you do your own typing?
Mr. Wolf, if you knew the hours and days and years that I've pounded a typewriter.
Of course. Archie.
Yes, sir?
Why don't you take Miss Ladd up and show her the orchids?
You never know about Nero Wolfe. At least I never do. This was something I would have bet against 1,000 to 1. I couldn't understand it. But I certainly couldn't complain.
Archie, look at this one. Oh, did you ever see anything so gorgeous?
Very pretty.
Oh, they're all just beyond belief.
Yeah?
But you're not even looking at them, Archie.
What? Oh!
Archie, are you always like this?
What do you mean, like this?
Well, so distant and preoccupied.
Honey, you got me wrong. Completely. I was thinking.
Oh.
Yeah, about telephone numbers.
Well, it's a lovely thing to think about. What can you think about telephone numbers?
I was thinking how some girls have them and some don't.
Oh, I see. Archie, I apologize.
For what?
I did have you wrong. You're not a bit distant.
I can be a lot closer than this, honey. What is it?
What's what?
The number.
Oh, it's in the book.
Yeah? I wonder.
Sound as if you don't believe me.
Oh, I believe you, but here's a telephone book here. Let's lick it up together, shall we?
Archie.
Yeah?
I'm afraid I lied to you.
I was afraid of that, too.
Are you angry?
Well, I can take no for an answer, honey. Even when it's hard to take.
Archie, I've changed my mind. I want you to have my number. And I want you to use it, too.
You know, honey, I'm beginning to take an interest in this dialogue. Let's have it.
Okay. Olympia 93659.
And a very, very pretty number it is. Valerie Ladd. Two D's?
Mm-hmm.
Olympia 93659. Honey blonde. Gorgeous.
Oh.
Spelled gorgeous. There. What are we doing tonight, Olympia 9?
And I said that you were distant and preoccupied.
We were talking about tonight.
All right, Archie. Yes, I'd love it. Oh, these orchids, they're really beyond belief. And you won't even look at them.
True. I'm too busy looking at you.
Well, how do I look, Archie?
Beyond belief, honey. Beyond belief. Well, there goes the Goodwin luck again. It's a house phone, partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Okay. He wants us to come down.
Archie?
Yes, dear?
Even if he says no, we still have a date?
Honey, though the heavens fall. When we entered the office, Mr. Wolfe was frowning over a sheet of letter paper in his hand. He looked up and tossed the paper to me.
That is a peculiar thing, Archie. The sheet of letter paper just arrived. Since Miss Ladd is interested in detection, show it to her.
Thank you. But, well, some sort of code, isn't it? Q-W-E-R-T-Y-U-I-O-P. That's all. What do you suppose it means?
You're kidding.
Archie.
Oh.
What? Did I say something wrong?
No.
Miss Ladd, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I haven't time for an interview just now. Goodbye, Miss Ladd.
Oh, but Mr. Wolfe.
Goodbye, Archie.
Say goodbye to Mr. Wolfe and let's go, honey.
Goodbye.
That's the way things can be around here. Well, here's the door, and shall we pause for station identification?
Oh, I'll wipe it off, Archie. There.
Thanks.
What happened, Archie?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, Mr. Wolfe, I mean.
Oh.
Why did he suddenly want me to go?
Well, I'll tell you, though I don't know whether I should. That code message he showed you?
Yes.
QWERTYUP.
You remember?
Yeah, sure, because I use a typewriter. From left to right, it's the first bank of letters on any typewriter.
I see. It was a test.
Yeah. And you flunked it, baby. You're no writer.
Archie, I can explain.
Sure. Tonight.
Tonight, Archie.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
You do believe me, don't you, Archie?
Oh, of course, baby, of course.
Well, it's just that I was there at the party, I mean, when poor Florence was murdered. Then I read in the paper about, well, how they caught the man at Nero Wolf's. And I always wanted to be a writer, so I thought if I could get an exclusive interview and... Well, that would be a good way to start my career, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes, it would. Pardon me a second, will you, Valerie? I gotta make a phone call. There's a booth. It'll only take a minute or two.
Nero Wolf speaking.
Archie, I'm at the Riviera with Valerie Ladd.
I'm happy for you, Archie.
I will remind you that I have not seen you since Valerie left the house.
I was otherwise occupied, Archie.
With orchids.
With orchids? What do you want, Archie?
Look, with that typewriter gag, you practically told me she was a phony, didn't you?
Of course, of course.
Just for the record, how did you know?
Have you looked at her fingernails? She never touched a typewriter in her life. I wanted to be sure.
Okay, now do you want me to tell you something?
You mean that your charming companion, Valerie, was at the party when Mrs. March was murdered?
How did you know that?
Simple, Archie. I got a list of the guests from Inspector Kramer. Among them was the name of Valerie Ladway. Simple?
Ladway. Lad. Yeah, sure. Okay, what am I supposed to do about it?
Just hang on, Archie. Just hang on.
I went back to the honey blonde, the beautiful phony Valerie Ladd, Ladway. I mean, I went back to the table where she should have been, but she wasn't there. I sat down and waited. Looked at my watch, 11:24. 11:32, no Miss Ladway. 11:45, I finally realized that not only Valerie, but her coat and bag were also absent. I called the waiter.
Yes, sir?
What happened to my friend?
The young lady left some time ago, sir.
Okay, give me the bill.
She paid it, sir.
She did?
Yes, sir. In fact, she said you gave her the money for it.
Yeah? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Well, I didn't know it, but she is certainly right.
Oh, my. Well, Archie, this is most thoughtless of you.
Sorry, I lost my keys. My money, too.
Your keys, Archie?
Yeah. Glad you were still up.
You lost Miss Ladway, too?
Definitely. I'm going to bed.
Good night, Archie.
You think it's funny, don't you?
Yes, Archie. Yes, yes, I do.
Good night, Mr. Wolf.
Archie.
Yeah?
Before you retire, one thing.
What?
Open the safe, will you? And leave it open.
Why?
Because there's nothing in it of importance. And it's a valuable safe, and I don't want it damaged. Good night, Archie.
At about 2 o'clock in the morning, I thought I heard a noise. I got up, put on the rest of my pajamas, picked up my gun, and went down to the office. A man had his head in the safe, and everything was scattered all over. I stepped inside the door. Put your hands behind your back and stand up.
Okay.
Now, just what are you after, Bob? When I woke up, I was alone on the office floor. I did not feel good. The place looked as if a hurricane had struck it. Every file drawer had been emptied. I felt a draft from somewhere. Got to my feet, trying not to joggle my head too much. There was the front door standing open. I closed it gently. Then very, very gently, I groped my way to the kitchen for ice, water, and towels.
Archie!
What? Oh, didn't you hear me scream?
No. Is it bad?
It's better.
You're angry, aren't you?
Nuts.
What, Archie?
I said nuts, Mr. Wolf, nuts.
I'm sorry about what happened.
Yeah, you expected it.
But I didn't expect you to be caught by somebody behind you. You must have known there would have been two of them.
Now, how would I know that? How?
Think of Mr. Ladway's delicate hands. Do you believe she intended to open the safe herself?
You think she stole my keys and so on? Well, let me tell you... Hey, wait.
That guy was digging in the safe that... Then who hit me in the head?
Archie, someday you'll be the death of me. In the morning, will you tell Inspector Kramer I'd like to see him here?
Fuming and protesting, Kramer arrived about 1:30. When I led him into the office, Mr. Wolfe was gazing thoughtfully at the ground floor plan of the house of the late Mrs. Florence Avery March. We'd gotten it from the original architects. Wolfe looked up and almost smiled.
Thank you for coming to me, Inspector. You know how difficult it is for me to come to you.
Okay, what's up?
I take it you haven't found the diamonds.
No, not yet. We'll break Inch down, though. Don't think we won't.
Oh, I'm sure. But this is what I want to ask you, and it's quite serious.
Okay, all right, what?
After the body was found, your men arrived at the house before anyone left.
Right.
And before anybody was allowed to go, every person was searched thoroughly.
Nobody could have gotten a pin or a needle out of that place.
I know something about police methods, and I believe you. Now, how thoroughly did you search the house itself?
Wolf, look. We've got that floor plan you're studying now. There are no hidden closets. Every square inch of that house has been examined. The diamonds aren't there. Willie Inch killed the dame and snatched the diamonds. What he did with them, we'll find out.
Possibly. Goodbye, Inspector.
At approximately 3:15, the postman arrived with an envelope for me. The envelope contained my keys, the bill from the Riviera, and the money left after the check was paid. At approximately 5:07 p.m., I discovered that Wolf had been using the telephone all by himself. He explained. He was going to have a party. He had invited all of the guests who were at Mrs. Florence Avery March's somewhat fatal party, including Anson Stark, Willie Inch, and Valerie. Nero Wolf, the natural-born ham, he made an entrance that would have been worthy of Queen Victoria in her heavier days. He sat in his oversized throne behind his oversized desk and beamed at the peasants. Valerie moved toward me.
I'm sorry, Archie, but you must know why I did it.
Why?
Well, you said I wasn't a writer. I wanted to prove that you weren't a detective.
Did you take the stuff while we were dancing?
I could have, couldn't I?
You could have bumped me on the head last night, too, couldn't you?
Oh, Archie.
Let it go. It was humiliating, though.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you realize the purpose of this party. We want to know who killed Mrs. March and what became of her diamonds. Mr. Inch.
Yeah?
When you visited the room where the body was found, the room was dark?
The bulb was burned out. I tried to turn it on.
If there had been a body on the bed, would you have seen it?
Maybe. With all those coats, maybe not.
Sure. Mr. Stark?
Yes, I said the light was on. Perhaps I was wrong. What of it?
You're engaged in the manufacture of tubes for radio and television, huh?
I told you that.
Inspector Kramer.
Yeah, what?
A light bulb was found in the wastebasket in the room where Mrs. March died.
Yeah, like you said, we tried the bulb in the socket and it worked. So what?
One more question. Does anybody remember whether Mr. Stark was carrying a bundle or a package under his arm when he arrived at Mrs. March's party?
Oh, I do, Mr. Wolf. I think he had a box of flowers.
That's true. I did bring flowers.
No, Mr. Stark. That box contained two parts of a light bulb and some adhesive. During the party, you strangled Mrs. March, put the diamonds into the light bulb, assembled the thing, and screwed it into the lamp socket. Archie, stop him. Really, Archie, it was quite simple. Light bulbs are only a stem glass bowl and a brass sheath. Yet nobody, including the police, would think of looking inside one. Mr. Stark could come back and collect his treasure any time after the excitement had died down. What's the matter, Archie?
I got a headache.
Valerie Ladd. Ladby. Poor girl. She and whoever the man was with her must have thought the diamonds were here. That bump on your head will be better in the morning. Bottle of beer, please, Archie.
I'm going to bed.
Yeah. Why must you place such confidence in women? Remember what happened to Mark Antony, Ann Sampson, and Archie Goodwin. Good night, Archie.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Don Stanley speaking.
From March of 1951, it's been The Adventures of Nero Wolfe with Sidney Greenstreet. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for on this edition of Yesteryear, but that's all right. Back with you the same time next week, and hope you'll make an effort to tune in and invite your friends to listen to the best of the golden age of radio right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio. Remember radio? We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, volio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
KCEA Atherton Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District, home of the Sequoia High School Cherokees, a California distinguished school.
like to make a proposition, dear, but not the kind that you suspicion, dear. I'm so afraid of competition, dear, I'll take an option on you. You came along so unobtrusively and sent me raving so effusively. I want your services exclusively. I'll take an option on you. Oh, gee, I can't foresee a wonderful future for me. I'm sold 100%. Let's make it permanent. I wish that I could make you sign for life. As partners, we could both combine for life. But till you say that you'll be mine for life, I'll take an option on you.
Only Big Band Station, 89.1 KCEA.
Thank you. KCEA.
You, I was lonesome, and when you came inside, dear, my heart grew light, and this old world seemed new to me. You're really swell, I have to admit you deserve expressions that really fit you, and so I've racked my brain hoping to explain all the things that you do to me. By mere bitter shame, please let me explain. By mere bitter shame means your brain.
Days
the number one station for big bands. Whether it's the driving beat of Benny Goodman's Sing, Sing, Sing. The lyrics that tug at your heart of Vera Lynn's White Cliffs of Dover.
There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover.
Or the rhythm that pulls at your feet of Artie Shaw's Dancing in the Dark. It's all right here, the soundtrack of your life. Nothing but the best music on Big Band 89.1 KCEA, the home of the big bands.